Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
To the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. I'm Jared Kimber, and today we're going to be talking about England's win against the West Indies in a biosecure cricket bubble and how Stuart Broad became the third quick bowler to 500 test wickets. So we'll have our own quick Steve Harmison in to tell us just how unlikely that is, but we'll also look at Ben Stokes, Jason Holder and some other players who were not all-rounders from this series. But we'll focus on England and who won this series after being 1-0 down in the first match. This is the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. But there's only one place to start.
Stuart Broad has just taken his 500th test wicket and made the breakthrough England wanted this morning. Lovely little piece of bowling to the right-handed Craig Brathwaite. The ball nipping back in, kept a bit low, hit Brathwaite on the back leg. Plum in front of middle stump, absolutely no doubt about it as far as the umpire was concerned. Great celebrations considering there's no crowd in the ground, but Broad reaches 500, the West Indies 45 for 3.
It's obviously a pretty ridiculous achievement to get 500, and he's obviously chipped in some handy runs in this test match as well, which is nice to see. So he's bowling really well at the minute, and hopefully we keep grabbing the switch.
He knew exactly when to seize the moment and he did it. And for me, that's why he has to play it, because he's a match winner.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective. I'm Jared Kimber, and with me is Steve Harmison, who, to be fair, I'm not sure what would have had to go right for you, Harmy, to get to 500 wickets. Would you like to take us through the list of the things you might have had to change?
Diet, lifestyle. No, I tell you what a fantastic achievement. I was asked to have a look at some stuff from Stuart, and I remember the little baby face assassin came into the dressing room from Leicester in Colombo, wasn't it? First test match. And I've got the scorecard up in front of me here. He bowled 36 overs, 5 maidens, 1 for 95 in that first test match. And I knew he was going to do great things, because I thought, at the age he was at, 18-year-old, there was something special coming with him. Bear in mind, Jared, it was the start of 2020 when he first really hit the headlines, bowling down the hill at Grace Road. And Leicester had a good side at that time. Jeremy Snape, Darren Maddy, they got the finals there quite a bit. And this young, long blonde-haired Lux came into a one-day white ball side. But then he came into the test match arena, and he's never looked back. And I'm over the moon for him, because I know we've got a few people that are really close to him, Matt Pryor especially, who is part of the TalkSport 2 team for the commentary, who is really close to him. But this kid, I had no doubt that he was going to perform when he got to Manchester, because when he went on air in Southampton and started saying, he was disappointed, he was upset, and then Ben Stokes says, yes, he had to say the party line that he was hungry to perform. He still wanted, and he didn't mind that. There was no doubt Stuart Broad was going to perform in this test match, and I'm really pleased for him. He's been a credit and a fantastic ambassador for this great game in England.
It does tell you what a weird world we've entered when it comes to cricket. One of the things I say quite often about Stuart Broad is perhaps other than Harbhajan Singh, I can't think of another 400-plus test wicket taker who gets left out of the side as much as Broad. Yeah. And now you've got, he's a 500 test wicket taker, and yet 15 minutes ago, he wasn't there. It's such a bizarre world we live in that someone like Stuart Broad isn't playing in every game.
It isn't, but I think that's probably down to why he's been making his mouth go and why a lot of us that have known Stuart and have got arguably a cricket brain to say we've got to get away from this Broad and Anderson comparison. You know, there's 4 years between the two. And the 4 years between the two is Jimmy Anderson at the same age as Stuart Broad has taken 130 test wickets, you know, to the age that he's at now in that 4 year difference. Now that's more than Chris Wokes has got in his whole career. Chris Wokes has just took 5 for 50 in a test match to win the game. And everybody's talking about Chris Wokes as not as a veteran, but somebody who's been around a long, long time. That's how long Stuart Broad, Jimmy Anderson have been together. But unfortunately, I think that's the biggest frustration that Stuart Broad's got at this moment in time. I think that's why he went on TV to vent his frustration at not being selected down at Southampton to say, you know what? Jimmy Anderson is nearly 38. I'm only 34. And there's a lot more life in me yet. And I tell you what, I'm going to go and prove it. And in these last 2 weeks, he's done that. And he's got 500 test wickets. And Courtney Walsh, Glenn McGrath, Jimmy Anderson, the only ones I've seen bowling that's got more than that. I tell you what, that's a fantastic career.
It certainly is. And this is Darren Goff, who was talking earlier today on The Drive about Stuart Broad and about his doubters.
Oh, dear me, he ain't half proved, but he's still good enough. Being left, if those selectors don't dare text me and tell me you were all a plant to leave Broad out that first test, you left him out because they didn't think he was good enough. They thought he was the weak link in that team.
Not to motivate him.
Not to motivate him. Not the first match of the summer when they've just had 5 months off. No. They made a mistake, realised it, brought him in for the second test, then decided to rest Anderson. And since he's come back in, he's been outstanding.
Because of what has happened, off the back of what Goffey's just said, because of what has happened in the next couple of tests with Broad, it's become almost the first thing that we're thinking about now, this sort of rotation. We talk about it, it's a baseball idea, really, the way that baseball pitches are used. You have like a platoon of bowlers and you bring them in for different conditions and from different opposition. But because of the way that we've always played cricket, we kind of always think that the best team has to play all the time. So it's these two different things are sort of clashing when it comes to Stuart Broad at the moment.
Yeah, but I think when you look at it, that when you put it in that context, Jared, you're looking at the balance of your attack. And the problem I think that Stuart had at Southampton is, why is it always Broad and Anderson? Why is it not, why aren't we looking at someone like Jimmy? And I think you take Jimmy in the context of he's got 586 test match wickets. And you're putting Stuart in the same pigeonhole and saying, well, we can't play them both in the same time side. Actually, they should be saying is that, well, we might have to leave Jimmy out here. They're frightened to leave Jimmy out. They don't want to leave Jimmy out. So why is it Stuart that keeps getting left out? So I can understand his frustration. If it's away from home, I can understand. I don't think both of them can play in the same side. But Stuart has carried this bowling attack. And Jared, you've been with us over in, the Caribbean. You were out in Sri Lanka when he didn't get a game there for TalkSport 2. We're looking and thinking, well, we need a different balance to our attack. So why is it Stuart that keeps getting left out? And I think that's what his frustration was. And that's what he's probably trying to say in Southampton. Flip side that, though, Jared, I would imagine there's quite a few bowlers. If I was the likes of Archer and Mark Wood and Sam Curran and even Chris Wokes, who's played in this test match, I might have been a little bit upset by what Stuart Broad was saying because, what you're trying to say about me, you're having a go at me saying that I'm not good enough because Stuart Broad should be in this side and not me sort of thing. So I think there's a fine balance the way that was taken. I'm pleased he's performed because of I think he's got over that milestone. But I still think when it comes to the grand scheme of things, in England, it's fine. I think you can play Wokes Anderson, Broad, Archer, like they did, and potentially not play the spinner because you've got Ben Stokes. I still think you could play that sort of attack. But if Stuart Broad was left out at Southampton, which if rumours were right, that it was because we are trying to build for an Ashes series in a couple of years' time, and we don't believe that this bowling attack can go, then all of a sudden Jimmy Anderson's place might be up on offer, because Stuart Broad is saying, well, I want to be in that team, because I personally, as much as I love them both, I still think, and you know, you're a native Australian, on them sort of pitches, I still think England might need more firepower than Broad and Anderson.
Definitely. I mean, the thing about Broad is, we've seen over the last couple of years, I mean, these tests he's been bringing against right-handers, but up until recently, he was dominating left-handers and struggling a little bit against the right-handers. Australia, I mean, I don't know what it is about Australian batsmen, but it seems they've always got about six left-handers in the top order. It is, you know, ridiculous to me to think that Stuart Broad won't be playing in that first test, being that he's been so good. And he still is fairly fast and very tall. So he should suit Australian conditions, perhaps even more than Anderson.
Absolutely. And Jimmy, and I didn't realise this until we did the Follow and Odd podcast. And by the way, as soon as I can bring that Follow and Odd podcast up, I'll stand in your shoes. Congratulations on the birth of
thank you.
Of the child. And yeah, I hope everything is as well in the Kimber family. I had Broad missing out the first test match and Anderson in it, but I hadn't done my homework as much as John Norman, who said Jimmy averages 70, over 70 at the Gabba, so it might be Broad instead of Anderson, alongside an Archer and Wood type, or a two quick bowler type, when they go to Australia. I still believe the two of them should go to Australia, because I think you need the experience that they've got, and I think they've proved over the course of the last sort of few weeks that England have got a variety of bowlers, and I think they'll be right to use them all in a series, rather than just pigeonhole and say, right, this is how to go. I understand what Goffey's saying there. You know, you pick your best bowlers, but when you look at the series and how crammed they're going to get in, and after this pandemic, it's going to be even more condensed. I think England's pool of bowlers at this minute in time, it's going to take a strong selection panel, management, strong management, and a strong leader to say, right, you're not playing for the benefit of the team, but we believe this is the best bowling attack to take on and get 20 wickets in this test match on this surface. And if they do that, I think England have got a good chance of going to Australia with a little bit of confidence.
Well, we're talking about the future, and we're talking about Stuart Broad. So here is Stuart Broad on the future.
I'm 34 now, but I feel like I'm bowling as well as I ever have done. I've done some technical work and changed my run-up in the last 18 months. And I'm not someone who sets targets. You know, I never said I really want to get 500 wickets or 600 wickets, anything like that. I'm someone who looks pretty short-term. But at the moment, I feel fresh. I feel fit. I'm bowling how I want to be bowling, bringing the outside edge of the bats into play, bringing the slips into play, but also LBW and bowl being a big dismissal of mine. So, you know, we bowl for one reason only, and that's to take wickets that can help secure test match wins and test series wins. And it's a great feeling sat here knowing that I've come into an attack that's had an influence on us winning this test series, because we've bowled brilliantly as a unit. Everyone's played their part, and it's a very happy changing room right now.
That was Stuart Broad. You're listening to The Cricket Collective on Talk Sport 2. Still to come, myself and Steve Harmison will continue to look back on England's victory at Old Trafford. Well, their couple of victories at Old Trafford. And as they start to show more promising signs with the bat.
Joseph in, right arm over. That's a lovely shot from Rory Burns. Pushed through mid-off, all along the floor, and it will run away for another boundary.
I've always been under pressure to keep scoring. I've always felt like that at Surrey before test level, and I feel like it in the same way. Runs are currency, so keep trying to put up numbers and keep trying to impress on those sorts of things. And, you know, obviously learning on the job a little bit, you go to different places that you haven't been before, and you try and take lessons from people around you and try to learn as much as you can. So, I suppose to a certain extent that there is a point of feeling settled, but I think it's also a dangerous position to pick, so I think you want to keep scoring runs as much as you can.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. As you heard there, Rory Burns was again in the runs in the third test as England recorded their first opening partnership of 400 runs at home for the first time in 4 years. Harmy, they are making runs at the top of the order. It feels weird to follow English cricket and see that.
It does, yeah, and I think it's great to see. It gives, you know, that explosive middle order that I think the selectors want, i.e. Stokes, Pope, Butler, and whether it's the you know, Bess or Wokes, it gives them a little bit of freedom down the order if Burns and Sibley bat, you know, for a reasonable time at the top. And I think if in England, especially against the Duke ball, 250s in a test match, and I think you can leave the test venue thinking, you know, I've done my job for the team. You know, everybody wants test match hundreds, and you know, they don't come around too often. But I think Rory Burns can leave Manchester thinking, you know what, feeling, I've had a good week. You know, 57 and a 90. Especially setting up a declaration, I think he can feel proud by the efforts he's had this week, and I think put another cement his place that little bit more, because I think it was close anyway. You know, we've struggled in opening partners for Alistair Cook, then Alistair Cook leaves, and you know, Rory Burns, he's averaging mid 30s, and it's not a huge average. Where we've been over the course of the last 5-6 years trying to find opening batsmen, it was good enough and it was acceptable. Now I think hopefully that confidence of these 250s in this game might just sort of that raise that level a little bit more, and hopefully Rory Burns can raise the average getting closer to 40 and in excess 40, and hopefully cement his place for a long time to come. Because we mentioned Australia, and we always do, Jared, you know, in England we always talk about the Ashes, whether it's coming over here or going over there, and you're always building for it, and what you need is to have a little bit of momentum. Dom Sibley's had, you know, a relatively good series. Yeah, openers will always get out early in England against the Duke ball. He did that in the first innings. He gets 50. He gets 50 in the second innings. He got 100 the other day. So, you know, in an ideal world, England have got to hope that in the next sort of 16, 18 months, that these two are England's two opening batsmen, and they can both get to Australia with some form under their belt. Because, like we've seen many times before, if you want to be successful in England, in Australia, you have to get over that new ball. And these two look as though they're quite comfortable absorbing the ball, which will nullify the Cook ball when they go over there, which doesn't expose that middle order. Because when England's middle order get exposed, the ball moving, they're in real trouble.
Yeah, I think the most interesting thing for me is how well Rory Burns handled Kemar Roach. Kemar Roach is essentially the best bowler in the world when it comes to left-handers. I think he was averaging something like 13 against them coming into this series. And England basically said, we're just going to hang in there and we're going to show a lot of patience. Weirdly enough, I mean, Rory Burns has shown, I think, a few times now in Test cricket, even against some fairly average spinners like Roston Chase, that he struggles against the spin a little bit. But against someone like Kemar Roach, who's been all over some very quality batsmen from around the world, I think that's when it showed that he is definitely of test match level. And that's a tough level to be in at the moment. There's a lot of good bowlers in the world that you come across.
Absolutely. My only thing with Rory Burns, and here's one for you as the statistician, I find Rory, it's not a case of how Rory Burns gets out. For me, it's the time he gets out. I see Rory Burns getting out. It's sort of 58 minutes past going into a drinks break on the hour. I see him getting out the over or two overs before lunch, or the two overs after lunch. It seems for me with Rory, it's a concentration thing. I've met it. It's like a club cricketer getting out, trying to slog a six after he's got 50. He's had an applause, he's raised his bat, and then all of a sudden he slogs one up in the air. I find Rory Burns has getting out, whether it's something that he needs to work on or something that I'm just picking up on, but I've seen him get out quite a number of times, especially against spin, that it's just before a break or just after a break, i.e. a drinks break or a lunch or tea interval. And that's the only thing for me. And if that's the biggest fault I can find, then I think he's got a chance, because he's spending an hour at the crease as an opening batsman, getting through to drinks, and then just losing his concentration a little bit. It's something he might be something that's there, might not be. But I think this kid's got a chance, along with Sibley. And I think if they can find that number three, Crawley's, we've seen a sample size of him. I think it was right to bring Crawley back in and give him the chance, because when you've got somebody of 24 and 34 of a similar ability, you'd hope that the 24-year-old might, you know, get himself a little bit better and better educated and kick on that a little bit more. And I think Crawley was right to come in at number three, which then gives, obviously, Root to go back down to number four. But if you can give the middle order of Pope, Stokes and Butler a chance of tired bowlers, older ball, then it goes back to somebody we're going to get on later on and talk about, Stuart Broad. That team in the sort of late 2000s and then, you know, the 2010, 11, 12 was so strong because Cook, Strauss and Trott absorbed the ball so much to give the likes of Peterson, you know, Stokes himself, Matt Prior, Graham Swan, Stuart Broad, a license to take the game away from teams with the bat. I think that's where England have got to hopefully try and get back to.
The one negative probably with the batting, and it's not a massive negative, is still sort of what happens with Jos Buttler. He made some runs in that last test. Even when he's made runs at times in this series, he still hasn't looked particularly on top of it. You talk about the explosiveness. Jos Buttler's strike rate is 58 in test cricket. And it doesn't look like he's about to, you know, massively push that up. Is there going to be calls, perhaps, if he fails a little bit against Pakistan again, for him to be dropped, do you think?
I think there's got to be questions whether it's calls to be dropped. There seems to be this thing to have Jos Buttler in the England dressing room seems to be huge. He seems to be more beneficial for them off the field than he is on the field, having this character around. He's a sounding board. It looks as though he's a good sounding board for the captain. He's a good guy to have around. And I think England are desperate. Look, Jared, nobody wants him to succeed more than me. I think the world of the kid, and I want the kid to succeed, because I can see there's huge natural ability in there. But there's got to come a time where that goes, then the record's got to come into it, and then the stats are, they're not looking great. He's won Test Match 100. He's batted at 5, he's batted at 6, he's batted at 7. They've tried him a little bit higher. I go back to Johnny Bairstow, averaging 35, batting at number 7, got 5 Test Match 100s.
I remember that guy.
Yeah, and I struggle to understand why, what he did wrong. If Johnny Bairstow was given the chance that Jos Buttler, the license that Jos Buttler had, I think, you know, Johnny Bairstow would have scored more international runs. But I can understand them wanting to try and give him a chance. I'll let him off in this test series, because I think, what is he? He's batted 5 times, and I think three of the 5 times he's gone in a selfless way. You know, in the second test match, both innings at Manchester, he had to go in and play for the team, as in, we're trying to get the move on, trying to get going. So for me, I give him a free hit on that one. He came in this test match, got 67, but a long, long time, 140 balls. There's something there. I just find with Jos, he gets between a rock and a hard place on how he wants to play. In one day cricket, in white ball cricket, it's a stand there, I pick my bat up, I see it coming at me, and I hit it straight back where it's come from. In test match cricket, it doesn't seem as though he has an idea of what he wants to do or the game plan he wants to go down. And by the time he sort of gets to the middle and works it out, he's been worked out and he's been either knocked over, or there's just even more pressure that's going on him. So times, the jury's still out on that one. I think we all want Jos to do well, but unfortunately, it's there's more and more times that's going by. There's still a question mark there. But I think if he can score some runs, it'll be huge for that dressing room, because it just seems the selection panel, the coaching staff, and more importantly, the captain and the vice captain want him in that side. And it just seems as though Johnny Bairstow, Ben Foulkes, I don't think, for me, he will be in the equation, but Johnny Bairstow especially, it seems as though they've done something wrong, or his face doesn't fit, and he's been eased aside, because they'd rather have Jos Buttler there.
bowlers, let's go into those a little bit. Australia has Stark, Hazelwood, Cummins. New Zealand has Bolt, Wagner, Southee. There is Roach, Holder, Gabriel, as we've just seen. India have Bumrah, Shamsi, Ishant. England's strength up until very recently was basically all-rounders. And it's still kind of all-rounders because they've still got Curran, Wokes to go with Ben Stokes. And Moeen Ali, hopefully, is not that far away. But suddenly, with Wood, Archer, Broad, Anderson, perhaps, you know, someone like Ollie Stone, not too far away, some very skillful bowlers out there as well. I don't think I mentioned Wokes in that particular list. Suddenly, England has an incredible stable of, what, 5-6 bowlers who are all clearly international quality.
Absolutely, Jared. And it's who they play, where they play them, and what they play them on. That seems to be the conundrum for England. Broad has said what he said at Southampton, got himself back in the team. Was it media pressure? Was it, you know, the fact that he went out and spoke? Was it the plan that Stewart probably knew that he was going to be playing at Old Trafford whenever he got there? So he went out there and put some pressure on himself. Who knows? But I think in England, with the Duke ball, I don't think England have got an issue. Not one issue. I think it's when you go overseas, maybe to the subcontinent, you potentially have to play two spinners, which we haven't got. Where we go to Australia when we play on a wicket which is a little bit more batsman friendly. Have we got the firepower? I think we're starting to get that. I can name three or four fast bowlers as well as Wood and Archer. And I think then it comes down to the selectors picking the right squad with the right ball on the right surface to take 20 wickets. And I think that will always be the issue. The fact that Broad and Anderson can't play away from home, I think there is an element that, but I don't think it's as big as what the likes of the TV commentators, Nasser Hussain's big on, I don't think they can play, and I think Michael Atherton says exactly the same thing. I think a lot of that is down to we haven't had a batting unit to give them the chance to get enough runs to play and to perform. So time will tell. The embarrassment of riches of bowlers we've got, I think, is fine in this country with the Duke ball. I don't believe that it's as strong playing with the Kookaburra ball in the Southern Hemisphere. But I think if you're winning matches, and it's huge confidence builder, if you're winning matches and you're going into series off the back of winning a series, then it gives players the confidence and the momentum that goes with it. And it also affects the opposition that you play with because they also think, you know, who we're playing against, how well they're bowling. So there is an element from that. So I think we still have to work on when we're away from home. But at home at this moment in time, I think England can play 3 from 6 and still be a great shout to winning and taking 20 test match wickets.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a very good home attack, but I think there's a few signs that it might be able to travel as well. We are in an incredible era of bowlers, which should be pointed out as well. You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with the Institute of Cricket. Next up, we're going to discuss the tourists and just how big a role they played in this series. Well, at least 50% of it.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
So Roston chases in again.
Bolden! Burns! Oh, what's happened? Oh, big appeal for leg before. Wigan up goes the finger!
Whoops, Holder on strike on 198. Short and pulled out towards deep mid. Wigan and it's gone for four.
Sheed will bowl to Hope, who decides to get after him, and he does it beautifully.
Bairstow waits with his bat raised in this almost baseball style, and this again, he's played on as well! Roach has got another! New over begins from Kemar Roach. What a
spell! He's got another one!
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with myself, Jared Kimber, and Steve Harmison. And it's now time to look at the performance of the visitors, the West Indies, who sacrificed so much to get to this series in the first place. I was pretty strong, Harmy, on the fact that I didn't think the series should have gone ahead. I haven't really changed that. But the fact that the West Indies did come out here, the death toll in the UK is higher than some of the islands that these kids come from. So you can understand why some of them didn't want to come out here. But it's a huge thing for them to be able to come out here and, put this series on.
Yeah, and this program's gone for what 36 minutes now, and I didn't want to go against our producer by saying how good it was at the start on how much credit these guys deserve, because putting to one side everything that's going on in the world and coming over and isolating yourself in a hotel room on a cricket ground. And going and doing, like you mentioned before, the death toll and the size of countries they've come from. I think that, for me, far outweighs how much any runs anybody's got, any wickets anybody's got, and what the series score was. This is a phenomenal gesture by the West Indies, and I think Pakistan have done the same. And I think to get cricket being played, even in empty stadiums, and there's been a lot of talk about it would have been great for a full stadium to see Stuart Broad get his 500th test match wicket, and it would have been, but just for sports fans to see live sport on TV or listen to it on the radio, I think that's hats off to the 22 guys that go out there at Southampton and twice at Manchester. And I think they've been led perfectly by their captain, as always. I think he's getting more and more impressive every time he does take the field as the West Indian captain. And I think circumstances beat them. I think the circumstances, three test match in three weeks, that didn't go down well for them. I think if it had been over 5 weeks, and they could have gotten a rest into the likes of Gabriel, Holder, Roach, Alzari Joseph, I think I wouldn't say it would have been a different series, but I think there would have been a lot more competitive when it comes down to the bowling department, because I think it looked as though they started off brilliantly and then they got tired as they went along because they didn't seem to have the pool of players that England had to choose from. So circumstances, I think, beat them in that aspect. But forget about them not retaining or winning the Wisden Trophy. I think a huge amount of credit to the West Indies for even contemplating coming over and playing while the world is the way we're living in this moment in time.
And the fact that they did come over and beat, I think, where England are ranked third, I think, in the world, and West Indies were ranked seventh. It's a huge thing to come and win away from home. There aren't that many teams that win away from home. Well, what were your thoughts on the first test? Because it always looked like I wouldn't say luck. I don't think that's the right way of putting it. But I think a lot of things went right for the West Indies in that first test, which is how you win tests away from home, to be fair.
I think what you had in that first test match, when you look back at it, no Joe Root is huge for England. I thought it was massive for England. And I stick by what I said. I thought that was arguably the weakest batting unit I have seen England in arguably my lifetime. Burns, Sibley, Denley, Crawley. Take Stokes out, but Pope Butler, the way he's batting, best. That for me was gettable with the fresh bowlers that the West Indies had, and that's what transpired. I think there's a lot of good things come out of the West Indies cricket. I hope, and I'm sure Phil Simmons will leave the British Isles and go back to the Caribbean Islands and think, you know what, we've unearthed a few, well, answered a few questions here. I think in Blackwood, they've got somebody. I said this last week, Jared, on the Cricket Collective with Macca. You could potentially have a middle session with Blackwood, and by the time they get Hettemeyer back, and they could lose two wickets in two balls, but they could also get 200 in a session, because God knows what could happen with the two of them if they got going, because they've got something which is West Indian flamboyancy, and they've got style, they've got that something that little bit different. And I think on good flat pitches, I think there could be a good middle order for the West Indies. I think Brooks looks a fantastic player. I know he's been around a while, but I think his stock's gone up. I thought he performed well. Question marks on Hope and on Campbell, which will be...
We won't see Campbell again, will we?
Yeah, they'll be disappointed. I think the biggest miss they had was Bravo. Batting at three, holding an end down and saying, right, you lot bat round me and let's have a go. Brathwaite, I thought he was excellent. I thought the bowlers were brilliant. I really did. I thought big Shannon Gabriel, three test matches in 3 weeks, to go the way he did, having the injury doubt before coming in. It's huge, Jared. I don't think people can underestimate what it's like to go in, have a not bowl for a long, long time, at 6'5", trying to bowl at 90 mile an hour, day after day after day. It does take a toll, but also the stiffness and the size of the body and trying to get from your mark to your crease and let go of the ball. I thought he ran in and he gave everything for the West Indies. And, you know, for me, I still think Kemal Roach is one of the best bowlers in the world at line and length. And I can't believe he hasn't played as much county cricket as what he has done, because if there's a team out there that needs somebody to hit off stump more often than not with a Duke ball, there's not many better than what Kemal Roach is. So I just think the 15 days cricket in 22 or 23, what it was always going to be a test with the squad that the West Indies brought. But I thought they've competed admirably, and I think they've got to go away with a hell of a lot of credit, because of a lot of teams wouldn't have come. There's a lot of teams wouldn't have come. Was there three players that didn't want to come? Fair play to the rest of them that came over and give it a go. So, you know, the way the world is at this moment in time, to give the English supporters what they wanted, which was live cricket, and give the ECB what they needed. It wasn't what they wanted, it was what they needed, which was sport, being able to play, to fulfil contracts. It's a huge favour from West Indies Cricket Board, Johnny Graves, and the Islands, and that hasn't got to be it has to be very, very thankful from the ECB's point of view.
It's a very interesting time for West Indies cricket as well, because with new management has come in, Johnny Graves, but also new chairman, a lot of different Ricky Skerritt and a lot of different people involved. Finally, they are getting their most talented players back on the pitch. So Nicholas Puran, I mean, you talked about Hetmeyer and Blackwood batting in the middle order together. Nicholas Puran, I think, is still one of the most talented players in the world under the age of 25. If he is still under the age of 25, I have to check that in a minute. But he's only ever played for three first-class games because of how he was treated by Trinidad back in the day. And he had a car accident, wasn't treated well by the cricket board and left. And we've seen how many talented players. Andre Russell has a great first-class record. He hasn't played much cricket, but there was a lot of guys over in the West Indies who, if they'd been treated better, would have played really good had really good careers. I think we're now in a stage where I think we might start to see the best of them. Perhaps, as you said, they probably should have rested either Roach or Gabriel at one stage in this series. Even Holder looked overbowled, didn't he? Just looked like they were all running out of steam. And to be fair, Shannon Gabriel on his best day looks like he's running out of steam. His average over takes about 20 minutes to complete.
Yeah, but it's three test matches in 3 weeks. And when you haven't got a massive pool of players that have come over that you trust, and they brought some young players over and they've got some experience. Ian Bishop put a great thing on social media this morning. Can't remember the kid's name, the young bowler. He was talking to Stuart Broad about the way the video looked as though Stuart Broad's follow through and driving his knees forward. And it's like Stuart Broad giving his time, but it's also a young man, 22, 23 year old, going up to Stuart Broad and asking him about, you know, the art of fast bowling. And if they're wanting to learn, there's no better place to learn or people to learn from than the likes of Stuart Broad. But fingers crossed, you know, the West Indies, because I watched a programme last night on TV with Mark Butcher, our very own Mark Butcher, and he talked about the Wisden Trophy and the best team from the Wisden Trophy. 1968, I think it was, the Wisden Trophy, up until now. And the names that, from the West Indies point, and you see the, some of the crowds and see the enthusiasm and the way that the West Indies played their cricket in the 70s and 80s, you'd just love to get that back, because the Caribbean islands would have been great places to go and great places to visit. And I sampled it in 2004, and it was a fantastic place to tour on that front, and it would be great if they could get back to somewhere close to that, because it would be fantastic for world cricket.
Definitely. And it's interesting. It was Keon Harding, I think, the player that
that's
you were
the one. Yeah, yeah. There's such a sort of
A way that we talk about West Indies cricket is we talk about them being laid back. But, having worked with them and having a lot of them as friends, they are desperate to try and improve. And you listen to someone like Jason Holder, he wants West Indies cricket to rise up. And Kyron Pollard, their one-day captain, is the same. So hopefully they are certainly playing better cricket than they were a few years ago. And things are coming together. There's a lot of talented players
there.
Jared,
they're playing together, which gives you a chance. They've got a captain who galvanises islands. He seems as though he's got what's going on at different islands, and he can manage the player, people coming in. Because people listen to this and, you know, they might not understand what's going on, but the islands are very tribal, and he seems to get the island bringing them together. And that, I think, is the biggest fundamental to get the West Indies going forward. And if he does that, he's such a good leader. And if he does that, he's got half a chance. Because the one thing we've always seen with the West Indies is there's been some talented individuals playing as individuals. If Jason Holder can get them playing as a team, the West Indies will be a fantastic unit. And if that's the case, it'll be fantastic for world cricket.
Definitely. You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Jared Kimber, and Steve Harmison. Coming up next, we'll look ahead to the first taste of white ball action this summer as Ireland seamer Mark Adair previews the upcoming series against England.
Carved out towards cover, man underneath it, can't get there. Six.
Here is John Smutson again, and Jason Roy goes, the biggest one of all.
Yes.
Crashes onto our commentary box roof.
Into Banton, who's on the pull in a flash, and that has been dispatched and dismissed. Denley has absolutely nailed this, baseball style, Babe Ruth style, straight down the ground.
McGeady into him again, that's another six. He sliced it over backward point. That's outrageous. How do you do that, Moeen Ali?
How's that 76 metres? Stop it, that's at least 90.
Here comes Tom Curran, last ball of the game, and it's paddle swept and down towards short fine leg, caught by Anil Rashid.
Gives it a bit of air, Johnny Bairstow gives it more air. He wanted six in the last one, he's got six from this one.
Johnny Bairstow on fire, 56 off just 28 balls.
So just 48 hours after the end of the first test series since the resumption, the attention now turns to white ball cricket as the world champions England host England in a three-match series at the Aegeus Bowl. And to look ahead to that series, we're delighted to be joined by Ireland seamer Mark Adair, who unfortunately is not going to be part of the series, which is slightly ironic, Mark, because you are here because you're the ambassador for ExoSuit, which is a compression sportswear that's supposed to help athletes. And sadly for you, you've injured your ankle.
Yeah, it's a bit of a tough one, but not out for the full series, just ruled out for the first game.
Ah, well, that's not too bad then. Obviously, the suit's still helping you out a little bit there. Can you take us through Ireland? A few Ireland cricketers who I think are quite exciting, but maybe a lot of TalkSport listeners won't know as much about. First is Andrew Balburnie, who played for Middlesex back in the day and then sort of had a few back injuries and sort of cruised around in his career a little bit, in his own words. Suddenly he's become one of the most exciting white ball cricketers in the world, hasn't he?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And with him starting to lead the side now, it's going in an exciting direction.
And Harry Tector is another one. There's a few exciting cricketers who are sort of maybe not as well known. For a long time, there was, and you're obviously one of them as well, but there was that long period where we sort of knew who all the Irish cricketers were. They almost had like a generation together. And it's almost like you've got a new generation of the team coming through.
Yeah, absolutely. Harry's, he set to make his ODI debut on Thursday there. And I'm sure everyone's looking forward to seeing him. He's been really good back home in the domestic structure and in the T20 stuff. So, the sort of the golden era of Irish cricket is sort of, as it's been called, it's starting to come to an end, and hopefully there's a bit of new blood coming through and we can take us on to new heights.
Mark, you're saying there the new blood coming through, there's a little bit, it's actually, Jared will probably explain it better, but it's complicated how it works to get to the World Cup, where you've got seven test playing nations that are the bigger nations that can qualify, and then there's two or three teams from the emerging nations can come with the rest of the test playing nations. But this is the first part of the qualifying, isn't it, against England. So Ireland will be one of, even though they're going to be massive underdogs, they'll still want to hopefully try and get a scalp when the big guns aren't playing, to maybe give them the best chance of getting some ranking points.
No, absolutely. I think this is these are sort of games that are very important to us. The English sides might not view them as important, but again, it's international cricket for us, and at the same time, every 50 over game in this competition for us is very important, because it could lead on to the 2023 World Cup, and that's something that we definitely want to qualify for.
And how important is it for Irish cricket to, play well against England, as far as, getting support from back home? I mean, obviously, you lost that test match at Lords, but you guys were in that for a long time. I mean, it was your match to lose, realistically, at that point. So how important is it to come over and, really show that you're a full-strength team to the fans back in Ireland?
No, definitely. I think, the more that we can inspire the next kid to pick up a cricket bat, then the better. Grassroots for us is big back home, and the more we can sort of spark participation in youngsters, then obviously the more cricketers we'll have to choose from, and the player pool will get bigger and bigger, and that's something that we definitely aim to do.
And you talk about the kids in Ireland. It's been a break because of what's been happening in the world, and it's disappointing that Ireland couldn't get the first class status up, some first class cricket into some of their players. But who from that younger bunch that potentially could hit that 2023 World Cup do you think that will excel going into the next sort of 18 months, trying to stake a claim to give them the best chance going forward?
Look, there's a number of guys. I personally think, you mentioned him earlier, Harry Tector. I think he's got talent coming out of everywhere, and he's got a real good head on his shoulders, and he's a talented fielder as well. Like, so he's definitely someone that can drag guys with him, and sort of just up a level just from being around him, which is good. And the more guys we have like that in the environment, then the better Irish cricket will get.
And Mark, for yourself, obviously you're a fast bowler. How have you been sort of handling being in the bubble? I'm assuming you're still, even with the injury, you're still locked up as we speak, especially if you're expecting to play later in the series. So how have you been preparing, and how is this different to how you would normally prepare for an international for Ireland?
If I'm honest, it's not hugely different. Obviously, the volume of cricket would have been a bit higher beforehand and maybe got a couple of more games under our belt, but look, when it comes to nets and stuff like that and preparation time, we've got all the support we need. We'd obviously like to have a bit more game time, as I said, but you can get your bowling loads up quite quickly and and try and maintain those. At the end of the day, you only have to bowl 10 overs in a day, so it's not going to be huge volumes as opposed to red ball cricket, where you'd need those volumes to be up pretty consistently. But yeah, look, we've been working pretty hard over the last sort of 6 weeks. Although lockdown has sort of hindered things a little bit, but we all have, we've been working hard with our coaches back home, and then we came over here 12 days ago, I think, and been working hard here since.
And if you could just run me through what an exosuit actually is, Mark, because it sounds a great name, You know, it sounds like you're going into war rather than playing sport. So could you run me through what an exosuit is?
No, it's a bit of a compression garment. So it's for up top. Unfortunately, I don't have one for the ankle yet. but I'm sure that'd be good. No, it's a bit of a compression garment that has, it offers a bit of support around the shoulders. You know, it's a lot of guys have problems when they're throwing and when they're bowling and stuff like that. But you just do feel supported when you're wearing it. And yeah, I personally love it. And I'm not just saying that because I'm an ambassador, because it, but because it's actually been helping me. So yeah, I'm up in the limit.
And just on this series, you know, from a broader perspective, when Ireland get to play the major teams, obviously, you know, you were in the World T20 qualifiers not that long ago, and it's not the same kind of media coverage, is it? It's not the same kind of excitement. So this is, every time Ireland get to play England, especially in England, which hasn't happened that often, it's a huge moment for Irish cricket.
No, yeah, definitely. We love playing against England because it's a chance for us to test ourselves. And, you know, it's all well and good talking about how you want to go about things, but whenever, you know, you get down to it, whenever you're trying to chase 350, even higher, closer to 400 potentially. And, you know, these guys have been doing it against, you know, some of the best teams in the world. And, yeah, it's that sort of fearlessness which we look at, and do you know what, part of us is thinking, right, well, this is the standard, this is the benchmark that we need to get to. And you know, I love playing against these sort of teams because it does sort of show you where you're at and what you're made of. So, you know, it's a great opportunity for anyone who gets to play in it.
Well, big thank you, Mark, for coming on. Mark's in ambassador for Exosuit, the next generation of compression sportswear, giving athletes support and powering performance. For more info, visit exosuit.co.uk. Can I just say that had Harmy had an exosuit, I think we could have got him up to 500 wickets.
Do you reckon? Nah.
No, probably
unless you might get me to 500 pints on my elbow or something like that, but I struggle with 500 wickets, nowhere near. But I've just actually, while you just worked out there, Stuart Broad's international wickets tally, I think, is now 744. And I think that's how many I managed to get in first-class cricket. So it just shows you what a fantastic... I feel as though I had a good career, but it just shows you how good this kid is.
You've been listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. If you missed any of the show or wish to catch up, you can download the podcast from the following on feed, available on Apple Podcasts, Acast, Spotify, and now on the free TalkSport app.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.